Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Come on in. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, also on 100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Take us wherever you go. You can watch the show on YouTube as well. And it is a beautiful, beautiful Saturday that we've got on tap here in the Chicagoland area. Going to be one of the better golfing Saturdays, as well as no rain, it appears, in the forecast. And also, on top of that, Mike, it is not going to be one of those scorching 85, 90, and muggy days that we've had all week. But good morning to you. Hope you had a nice 4th of July. And it's going to be a pretty good golfing week, it looks like, as well out here.
Well, good morning, Tyler. And you hit the nail right on the head. The weather couldn't be any better. I mean, as far as our friends out in Silvis, Illinois, they're celebrating because traditionally this has been a very swampy, humid time of the year for us, and especially out that way by the Mississippi. So good news for Barry Cronin and all the folks out at the John Deere. They're going to have a great weekend. And for those around here in the Chicagoland area, you couldn't have asked for better, more ideal scoring conditions. So if you play bad today, that's on you. It's not the weather.
For sure. I do want to start today with the event that you were at last week, and you broadcasted live from last week at the Chicago Adaptive Open that took place out at Cog Hill last week. And I can imagine very inspirational to see in person, but I just want you to sort of put it into words, what that event, everything, how it culminated, and just your overall takeaways from what you saw out at Cog Hill.
Well, I think you use the proper word, inspirational, and I think we all walked away inspired in some way, shape, or form by these amazing athletes. And I want to stress amazing, because what I learned over the weekend is everybody's got a story. You know, everybody became afflicted in some way, shape, or form, either from birth or from a tragic accident. But the common denominator throughout the entire weekend was the celebration of golf and the ability for everybody to come together as a community. And this is a very tightly woven community at that. You know, they see each other throughout the country, all around. You know, we had 17 states represented here. Canada was supposed to play but had to withdraw. So our field is being built. So these folks see each other throughout the year, you know, in the winter down south. Now they're coming up north. So this is quite a traveling show of sorts. And it's going to actually really culminate even next week when they play the United States Adaptive Open out in Kansas, to which I'll be traveling out to see a lot of the same athletes we saw, visit with the USGA, and quite honestly start having some discussions about potentially bringing a U.S. Adaptive Open back to Chicago in the future, maybe in the year of 2028 or thereafter. But I can tell you one thing that is happening. We had about a dozen or more athletes that played here that will be in Kansas, and the story that they're going to be telling to their friends and to all those that want to listen out in Kansas is that their experience in Chicago was nothing but first class. And I think what this showed, both to the athletes here, to the USGA, and to anyone else that had their eyes on the Adaptive Open through the streaming that we did for the 5 hours on Sunday, is it showed that Chicago deserves a major championship. It deserves professional golf. It deserves golf of any sort, of any kind. With over 100 volunteers that came out to support this, we showed why Chicago is the right marketplace, both from a, you know, from a corporate perspective, but from just an overall ancillary volunteer perspective. The hospitality that we displayed was second to none. I was so proud of the team of, you know, the CDGA staff team that pulled this all together. Because, Tyler, when you really stop and think about it, what we did, we committed to this thing late in January. And the only reason we could do this was because of Frank Jemczyk and Catherine Jemczyk and Troy Newport, who's the general manager over at Cog Hill. They bought in with us. And had the site not bought in, there's no way, as much as our hearts are in the right place, we couldn't have done this operationally without the assistance of Cog Hill and the staff, everybody from anyone, Jesse, with the carts all the way to mm-hmm. Chewy and the food. It was unbelievable how everybody did their part, and it came off extremely, extremely well. And, you know, with that, we started right after the show ended last week with Andy North and Frank Jemczyk being our honorary starters. So having Andy on, you know, now a new friend of the show, if you will, mm-hmm. and he was on with us for a couple of segments, and I thought he was terrific. Well, wait till you get him off the air, and he's engaging with the crowd and being what I consider an absolute gem of a starter for us and a representative for the game of golf and really getting things started off in a really cool way. And Jonathan Snyder, Evan Mathias, and Tracy Raymond, they all told me afterwards they were so nervous. These are the three gentlemen who had to hit the first tee shots in front of several hundred people, I might add.
Yeah.
And later I was told a bigger crowd than they ever get for the U.S. Open. So we had fans out there, spectators out there. It was just a great weekend of golf after we got through some of the warm temperatures. And after an exciting first day, where after the first day we had Ryan Jackson winning the overall. Here we had a female leading the entire field of golfers with an even par 72, and we thought, what a great way to start this thing off is if we could have a female first time winner for our Chicago Adaptive Open. And unfortunately, she stumbled a little bit and had 77 on Sunday, But then Jarrett Fultz of Queen Creek, Arizona, ended up shooting the only under par score with a 71 on Sunday. So he ended up taking the overall title by one over Ryan Jackson. And both Jarrett and Ryan are going to be in Kansas this week for the U.S. Adaptive Open. So we're excited about having some of our players in that field. And in fact, Ryan's case, she's defending her U.S. Open championship. So all in all, the athletes had a great time. A lot of accolades and a lot of compliments were thrown to Chicago, to the CDGA, to Cog Hill for all the efforts and hospitality. But, you know, at the end, we did just what we do best, and that's host golf tournaments. And, you know, and we're pretty friendly people here in the Midwest, and I think we have a lot of raving fans that all played here. And, you know, they want us to be a major championship. They can't wait to come back. And some of the things we heard was, you know, best in class, you know, innovators, you know, at the forefront, you know, creme de la creme. So when we start to hear that kind of gratitude, and it's genuine gratitude at that, it really makes what you do on a day-to-day basis really feel like no work at all because of the simple thanks and the gratitude that these athletes showed. So I'm looking forward to reconvening with them next week to hear a little bit more about how things went. But for us already, and Robert Marchione and our staff, we're already meeting next week to talk about next year because the planning already will start, you know, in this case, 1 year in advance, which will give us more opportunity to be even more strategic about where we do, in fact, put it on the calendar and some of the other logistical things that we can do to enhance and actually improve both the telecast as well as the overall production for the athletes and fans themselves. So next year I look at us having a full field, more volunteers than we can shake a stick at, because I think we're onto something very, very good. And as the USGA said, you know, adaptive golf is somewhat like a tsunami, and you know, the CDGA, we're going to make sure that we're out ahead of this tsunami, and in fact we're going to be leading it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you pull up ESPN.com right now and you go to the golf section, the lead story, the front page story, is about adaptive golf right now, and it is about how it is such a growing sport, and you're seeing so many more people use golf in different ways now, and that the adaptive game is just, it's blowing up, like you said. Like, it is become this tsunami, and it has gained so much popularity that it is the lead. I mean, you've got a PGA Tour event going on right now. You had a senior U.S. Open last weekend. And all of this, and you've got the British Open in 2 weeks. You've got the Scottish Open next weekend. But it is the adaptive game that currently has the lead picture, the lead story right now on ESPN's golf coverage.
Well, you know, that doesn't surprise me. And the reason I say that is Mike Wan at the USGA told me, you know, when I expressed to him the interest of Chicago wanting to host an adaptive open, he looked at me and he said, you know, the U.S. Open obviously has the most impressions, optics, eyeballs, if you will, and maybe the Women's Open and Senior Open. But he said shortly thereafter, it's the adaptive open. It's not the amateur. It's not the mid-am. It's not the four ball. It's this event. And this event is actually, you know, challenging some of the other, you know, major opens, and in that being the senior and the junior and the Women's Open, because of the overall interest. And, you know, the other thing is when you mention about the tsunami, you know, the U.S. Census Bureau survey tells us that there are 57 million Americans out there with some form of disability. And, you know, so in other words, that's almost one in every four or five U.S. residents has a disability. And the Indiana University, in cooperation with Clemson University, found that 10% of the people with some form of disability now play golf. 22% of those with disabilities play golf before incurring their disability, but they're not playing now. But then 35% of the individuals with disabilities are currently not playing golf, but are interested in learning. And that's where our future is in the world of adaptive golf. There is, just like in regular golf, there are so many people who have the ability and want to play and want to learn. It's the same, but in a smaller scale, but the scale is big enough to move the needle in terms of expanding and growing the game. And it's one that all operators need to start paying attention to, because don't be surprised when a specialty cart or an adaptive player shows right up and pays their green fee and wants to go right on out with everybody else. It's here. It really is.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Just seeing everything from social media, talking with you today and throughout the week as well, like, everything about this event, it seemed spectacular. And Coghill, a very great host as well, for this entire event. And really, you couldn't find a better spot to have an event like this than Coghill's number three.
No, you really couldn't, because first and foremost, the golf course lays itself out from the three major tees, you know, forward, middle, back, if you will. Mm-hmm. It lines up perfectly with, obviously, the women players, but also the seeded players. So we had, you know, half a dozen seeded players playing in this thing. And, you know, and of some of the highlights, if you will, you know, this Thomas Duffy from Utica, Illinois, in a seeded cart, shot 79-77.
Yeah.
I challenge you to take out a cut-down bar stool and play seeded golf around and see if you can break 80. And speaking of breaking 80, there's a gentleman in our field by the name of Jake Olson. Now, that name may ring true with some folks because of college football, right?
Right.
Jake was a blind long snapper for the USC Trojans and was on the scout team, practiced religiously every day. He ended up getting into a game and was actually long snap for an extra point or a field goal. And so he has actual NCAA playing time. Well, he came out and played in this, and his dad was his caddy. And when you caddy for a blind golfer, it's a different form of caddying, let me tell you. And it was the coolest thing to watch his dad line him up, and Jake would just have the ultimate trust in what dad was painting a picture. He was very verbal and very descriptive in what Jake had in front of him, whether it was a tee shot, a mid-iron shot, or hitting a putt. And it was really the coolest thing to see Jake shoot 80-82. And now, folks, when I tell you he shot 80-82, his ball found the bottom of the cup all 18 holes. There was no gimmies. It wasn't like, oh, because Jake's blind, we'll give it to him within, you know, 4, 3, 2 feet of the hole. He had to get it in every single time.
That's incredible.
That, to me, was the most incredible thing to witness. Just Go on out today, close your eyes, and try to hit golf balls and try to putt just for a few minutes and see, A, how disoriented you get, and B, how fat you hit it, or just how you just clean miss it.
Right. And I was going to say, like, what is your even contact rate at that point? Like, that can't be easy to find and hit the ball when you have very little semblance of where that ball is in terms of your stance and all that.
That is so true. But what's amazing, in a game that's so easy to be off so little at impact, and obviously it has the ramifications of going further right or left based on the error you're making right at the moment of impact, I was astounded at how consistent he hits it. And I mean, his shot dispersion is absolutely incredible. He doesn't hit it very far off right or left. And I guess sometimes it's just you buy into what your caddy's saying and you've got nothing else to do but trust what is there. And he just goes for it. But one thing that really made my whole weekend is when his dad and Jake came up to me and said, "We will come back from Huntington Beach, California to Chicago to play in an event like this anytime. So consider us back for next year and all the years thereafter." So we got one of the best testimonials from Jake and his father, and we couldn't be more proud.
That's awesome. All right, when we come back, we will take a look at what's going on at the John Deere Classic, the only PGA Tour stop in the state of Illinois that you're going to see this year. So we will tell you what's going on out there, including some history that was made. All that coming up next on the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment is brought to you by PGA Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today as we take a look on what's taking place on the PGA Tour right now out at TPC Deer Run in Silvis, Illinois. It is the John Deere Classic. Two tied atop the leaderboard right now at 14 under. That is CT Pan and Aaron Rye. Harry Hall currently in sole possession of third. And then when you go into the tied for fourth, you get a giant cluster, including the likes of Denny McCarthy, Sung Jae-im, Luke Clanton, the amateur. And then how about Hayden Springer firing the 14th sub-60 round in PGA Tour history? That is the history I alluded to as we were going to the last break there. And that's now, what, 2 in 3 weeks for a sub-60 that we've seen on the PGA Tour, Mike? It kind of feels like, do you remember this in baseball a couple of years ago where we started to see the no-hitter? Like, it felt like we got, like, one every week where no-hitter here, then a no-hitter on Thursday, and then you got another one the next Wednesday. It almost feels like that's where we're at with these sub-60 rounds now. They're becoming less of a novelty, it feels like.
Exactly. And, you know, they're also talking about, you know, no-hitters. We also had them, like, two in the same day at times.
Right,
and
yeah.
And this thing happened so early in the morning, the announcers were like, "We'll probably see another one today."
Yeah.
But, you know, with this event and being as a conditioned golf course as good as it is out in Silvis, I would expect some more low numbers Saturday and Sunday because I think the conditions that they're going to get are going to be super. I think the wind is going to be down some. It came up yesterday. But going back to Hayden's 59, you know, another opportunity where you put the ball in the hands of these guys with the soft conditions and they can really start to go low. And once again, like you said, two times in 3 weeks, but it's the second time they put the ball in their hand, meaning they can clean it and put it back down and, you know, give themselves a preferred lie to put as much of that golf club and the grooves on that ball and make it do what it wants to do. But 59, whether you're playing a putt-putt course or you know, the John Deere, it's an achievement like no other, and I couldn't be happier for a guy like Hayden Springer.
Yeah, I think the other thing to note from this tournament is a lot of the big names in this tournament have not performed as well as you would think as well. I mean, you look at even someone like Jordan Spieth, who for a brief moment yesterday, it felt like he was going to have to make a putt to get in. Now, the cut line did move a little bit below, but it felt like as he was on his final putt, he missed, I want to say it was like a five-footer for birdie that would have really solidified him. But then he had more coming back the other way, and if he didn't sink that putt, he may have been out of it. And this is a place that where you think about with Jordan Spieth, got his first professional win here and kind of launched his career here. And it was cool to see him back here at the John Deere after he hasn't been back at TPC Deer Run in a little bit now. But to get him back as kind of the marquee name, if he had to sit out the weekend, boy, that would have been a real letdown.
Oh, I think you heard a collective sigh of relief from all the tournament organizers, the fans, everybody, because if you would have sent him home early, that really would have put a dent in the, you know, in the notoriety and the big nameness, if you will, because really they only had three of the top 30 in the field. But they did have a little bit stronger field than they did last year. So The Signature Series is, by design, doing what it needs to do to keep the top 70 engaged, you know, to try to get in over that top 70 line. And then for those that are, you know, trying to break into that 125 and those trying to get into the top 50. So I think what we're seeing is somewhat working. It's just less all the big names because they're all taken this week off for the most part. But we do have a few decent names in the bunch. Mm-hmm. But like you said, we were close to losing them, you know, towards the end of yesterday. But, you know, I expect today to be another shootout. And, you know, remember when Sepp Straka won this event last year, he opened up with a 73, but then he came back with rounds of 63, 65, and then a final round 62 on Sunday to finish 21 under and win by two over Alex Smalley. So this golf course is notoriously and historically gettable. And it will be for these guys because they are just that good.
Right. And even, I mean, it works both ways, too. Like Hayden Springer, you mentioned, 59 on Thursday, but then he goes even par 71. He's still tied for fourth, despite the fact that this is a round, this is a course that it's a shooter's paradise here. You can go really low, and he has an even par round, and he's still 12 under for the event, and we're only halfway through. He's only played two rounds, and he's still inside the top five right now. And you're right. Like, there haven't been the big names at this event, and even the big names have sort of struggled to a degree, but you still have guys like Sung Jae Im right there in the thick of things here. Denny McCarthy, one of the best putters that you'll find on tour right there. Big names, like you've got a Lucas Glover and a Zach Johnson, both tied for 18th right now. Those are guys with some Q rating along the PGA Tour there. So there are some names out there, but you're right. Like the elevated events have kind of created this thing where these smaller stops along the tour don't have the same gravitas as, I don't want to say what they used to be, but the other cool thing about some of these events is getting to see some of the young up-and-comers sort of build their names, like a Jordan Spieth used to do, like Bryson, like Victor Hovland did. They've come and played at these events, and it's kind of been the launching point for their careers where they found some early success and in some cases even won these events as young golfers on the PGA Tour, and it kind of boosted them into that next stage of their career where they got a taste of, all right, these putts aren't as easy as they were. The Saturday putts are not the Sunday putts. It's a little bit of a different game once you get deeper and deeper into these tournaments. So I don't want to say it's like the minor leagues because it is a stop along the PGA Tour, but I would say it's kind of that developmental stage that teaches you how to win and kind of grooms you into becoming a guy that can win not just PGA Tour events, but ultimately majors.
No, 100%. In fact, I think this weekend we could see a life-changing win for one of these gentlemen, and that gentleman could be Hayden Springer. I mean, here's a guy that's interesting. If you look at the leaderboard, he's tied for fourth, but he's the only guy who doesn't have a round in the 60s.
Yeah.
It's kind of looks odd. 59-71, right? Mm-hmm. But here's a guy that I couldn't think of a better guy for good things to happen to and have a life-changing moment. This is a guy that just lost one of his daughters, who was, you know, born with some, you know, some challenges and wasn't expected to live more than 3 days. And she ended up living over 3 years and passed away last November, about a few weeks prior to Hayden actually getting his tour card. So this is a new guy that we're getting to know in this Hayden Springer, and a guy that is easy to root for, and a guy that I'd really love to see come through and have one of those life-changing wins. Because like you said, this is the event that when Jordan Spieth made that shot out of the bunker, he was an absolute no-name. And before you know it, he all of a sudden got, tour, security, if you will, by winning and getting the exemptions into the following year. He now had his card. Then he ends up making it onto the President's Cup team, and his career just took off. You know, another gentleman who won our U.S. Open, Bryson DeChambeau, as you mentioned, that was his first of 9 wins, happened out in Silvis, Ohio, back in, 2016 or 17? And, again, a launching pad, just like you said. So the John Deere has played that role in the schedule, and it is a great, great event and a venue because it does put out traditionally very quality champions that go on and have very formidable, if not Hall of Fame type career results, as Jordan Spieth is starting to do with a couple of Masters and the other wins that he has under his belt.
Yeah. Are you eyeing anyone here who maybe on the younger side where this could be one of those wins that maybe catapults them into some more notoriety along the tour? I mean, not necessarily young, but a guy who's always been like pretty solid. Denny McCarthy is someone that I kind of see as like he can get the putter going, and then maybe it kind of launches him and helps propel him. Because we've seen some of these guys at later stages in their careers start to really find success in their early 30s, and maybe this could be one of those big wins for Denny. Kind of help him along there. I think you can never go wrong with someone like Sung Jae-im. Again, not a young guy, but someone who kind of learning their way. And then, I mean, you've got an amateur right now currently tied for fourth in Luke Clanton out of Florida State, who this could be his first like big taste of victory as well.
Yeah, no, I'm a big Luke Clanton fan right now because I think he has the poise. And, you know, he's coming off a really strong collegiate season. And, you know, once you get that momentum going and you just don't know any better, sometimes when you walk out on the stage at this time of your career, you just don't know any better. And that's really the best thing because you just play with what you know, and you're just taking, you know, the collegiate experience and just bringing it to the tour without it having any sort of, you know, anybody giving you any other advice to do otherwise. And so I think he's just keeping it pretty simple, just taking it, you know, one day at a time, one shot at a time, and he's getting it done. This is the type of event that would fit a guy like him to have his first win, an amateur who is going to have a very formidable PGA Tour career. It's just a question of not whether or not he's just going to get this thing started this week out in Silvis and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. But, you know, otherwise, you know, Aaron Rye is really set because this guy's been playing really, really good golf over the last half a dozen months or so, dating back even to the U.S. Open and even before that. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see him just hold on to the lead from here on out. But another guy and another journeyman, if you will. Now, I say he's not necessarily young in age, but he's young in PGA Tour years, and that's Eric Cole. Love to see that guy break through again and, you know, really get a more formidable win under his belt. And, you know, I think this guy has stuck around long enough and has paid his price on a litany of different tours. I think he is the king of all mini tours. So I'll be personally rooting for him because I know his mother.
Another name, too, and a guy who I believe came on the show a couple years ago, Michael Thorbjørnsen, who is currently sitting top 10 right now, 22 years old, fresh out of Stanford, but he has put together a couple of quality rounds here, 67-64 to get him to 11 under here through two rounds. That's another one of those young guys who, looking for tour status, trying to solidify himself as a member of the PGA Tour, who He's made 4 of his 10 cuts this year, including a top 5 finish. So this could be another one of those big weekends for Michael if he can go out there and put together a solid Saturday for himself. And like you said, all it takes is that one really big round. If he can go like 62 here to follow up his 64 from yesterday, he's going to find himself right in the thick of things come Sunday.
Yeah, it just takes a spark. And I'll tell you, it'll be interesting to see who leaderboard watches and who doesn't when it's all said and done. And does it help him or does it hurt him? Because you're going to have to play a really, really strong final nine on Sunday to be winning this thing. Nobody's going to give this to you. Whoever wins this is going to go out and earn it because it's that kind of golf course. And it is, par is no good here. It's going to be a birdie fest. And if that wind doesn't blow, that was the only reason the scores went up. Otherwise, you could have seen some incredibly low scores yesterday as well. So I'm looking forward to just a fun, you know, they pride themselves on birdies out in Silvis. Well, you're going to see a ton of them this weekend.
Yeah. And as for the local guys that we've been keeping our eyes on in particular, Doug Gim, currently tied for 32nd. He's 8 under right now. He's already on the course. He's 1 under through 2, 66 and 69 for Doug Gim out there. So rooting for him to put together a little bit of a day here. And Nick Hardy, unfortunately, missed the cut. And like you said, the par is no good. I believe he went 2 over yesterday. So that's certainly not going to be a round that does you many favors when you're someone like Nick Hardy, who was solid on Thursday, went 70, and then he went 1 over yesterday. So I stand corrected. So he finishes at an even par, and like you said, par not going to be very good for you, not going to help you make a cut here out at TPC Deer Run.
No, and, you know, another notables that didn't make the cut either, you know, you've got your Nick Dunlap and Matt Kuchar's, Cameron Champ,
Neil Shipley,
Snedeker, Kisner, Berger. So the golf course still played difficult for some, and you know, it leaves those that, you know, notable folks that missed the cut scratching their head before they head over across the pond and start getting their body acclimated to the time change. And a lot of these guys are going to probably go over and play in the Scottish Open before they tee it up for the British.
Neil Shipley too, another name who missed the cut. He went 2 over. He's been one of the real promising golfers. Was the low am at the Masters, and was he also low am at the U.S. Open? I'm trying to remember.
Yes, he was.
So he's had a lot of success out there in major events, but then he goes into a PGA Tour event, not one of these elevated events, has a little bit of struggle out there. So this golf course, it can be fickle as well to some, but as you look at some of the scores on the leaderboard right now, some very, very good rounds put together. Your leaders right now, CT Pan and Aaron Rye, each at 14 under. All right, when we come back, I do want to ask you about scoring too, because like we said, this is one of those courses where scoring is, it's a very gettable course. What do you prefer in a PGA Tour event and in a major? Do you like an event like this where you're going to see a winner that is in the 20 under range, or do you prefer something a little bit lower than that? We'll discuss that coming up next. This segment brought to you by PGA Superstore.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with top tracer technology. As we've been talking a little bit about the John Deere Classic and some of the, how this is like one of those spots along the tour where you're going to see some pretty big numbers in terms of, we're talking winning numbers. Like last year, Sepp Straka, 21 under was the winning score. That was the same winning score as JT Poston as well. He's also he had a nice finish yesterday to make the cut. Lucas Glover was 19 under. Dylan Fratelli, 21 under. Michael Kim back in 2018 was 27 under. And then you look at some of the big names that have won this event as well. Bryson DeChambeau won at an 18 under. Jordan Spieth won twice, like we mentioned, at 20 under and 19 under. Brian Harman at 22 under. So you're going to see some of these bigger scores here, and I'd imagine as we're already off and running with a leader right now sitting at co-leaders right now at 14 under, you'll see something probably low 20s as your winning score, maybe even mid 20s as your winning score for the weekend. But Mike, what would you say for a major and then maybe just for your average tour stop? Where do you like to see that number finish at?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with this tour event in particular, I was looking at the leaderboard, and there are 26 players between minus 10 and minus 14. On one hand, that's kind of exciting because it's really anybody's tournament to win. But from a tour perspective, I don't like when I see the scores get in with a 2 in front of it, 20-some under.
Yeah.
You know, I think if somebody shoots a really, really good score, I think 67, 68, you know, even a 66 is, to me, showing really, really good golf. And if you were to string a few of those together, then I could see you being pushing up towards that 20 number, if you will. But chances are you're not going to be that consistent. So I think to answer your question, I prefer tour events between 11 under and 15 under, and I prefer majors between 6 and 10 under.
Yeah.
Because I like when golf is where pars, and even at times a bogey can be a good bogey. And there are times I like watching the players have to accept taking their medicine and letting that factor into their thought processes to how they're going to manage the rest of the game and accept that bogey instead of trying to be the hero and do something else. So I like when bogey enters into the, into the competition, if you will, in a good way, but also in a tragic way, because I just think it makes it more exciting. Here, you know, I don't like when somebody walks off the putting green after making par and feels like they lost a whole shot to the field. I know that feeling, especially walking off of some par fives. When you make a five, you feel you made seven, you know. And so I think, you know, for the person likes to see a lot of birdies, you're in heaven this weekend. I do like to see birdies, but maybe not at the rate where when you're starting to figure out who's going to be in it at the end, that you're just awarding birdies. Well, you know they're going to birdie 12, 14, 18. So then you got to figure out what are they going to do on the remaining two holes. To me, that's where then the telecast gets a little clunky for me to watch. I like when I'm on the edge of my seat and every shot, every hole matters. And I just feel like in some of these tour events where birdies are, you know, being made at such a rate that it's more of a given on certain holes than, you know, it's sort of like the mystery was already taken out before they put the peg in the ground on that particular hole.
Yeah, I'm with you. I usually say like 4 to 8, I think, is a good little soft spot there. And then I'm with you for your average tour stop. If you can be in the low double digits, so basically anywhere 10 through 14, 15, I'm kind of like in the same little range as you there. That to me is kind of the perfect thing where, all right, you rack up a few birdies, a few subpar rounds over the course of the weekend, and that's where you find yourself kind of in that 10 to 15 range. For me, that's kind of ideal for your average tour stop. You're not going to get that here. This is kind of like a Big 12 football game where you're playing offense, right? Not, defense feels a little optional, and you're going to see those scores get high. And then the majors, kind of like seeing like a little Big 10 football game. Like you get a little Penn State and Northwestern. You get a 10-3 barn burner there. Like something like that where it's challenging, and you're rewarded, you're right, for making par. And I think that maybe as the common golfer, you feel rewarded when you go out there and score par out there, and you're just as an everyday slapper. Like par is good for you, and I think when you see that out play out on the tour as well, especially where you're right, like an event like what we're seeing right now at the John Deere, and you par a par five, and it feels like you took a significant step back on the rest of the field. So, all right, when we come back,
right, I mean, even
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Let's go to a break.
Okay, yeah, we'll hit the break. We'll get your last little thought in there. And then also, let's get ready for the Scottish Open as well as the British Open, which is just about 2 weeks away now at this point. So we'll get you ready for all that coming up next here. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Tyler Rocky and Mike Gilligan, we talk golf with you every single Saturday here on ESPN 1000. And we'll get you ready for the British Open coming up in about 5 minutes. But, of course, there's no British Open without the lead-in that is the Scottish Open the week prior to that, which is coming up starting Thursday. And Rory McIlroy, always going to be the headliner at an event like this. He is the reigning champion at the Scottish Open, but the big thing for him is going to be, can he parlay that into success out at Royal Troon for the British Open the following week? Because he has now gone winless in majors for a decade. He has not won a major since 2014. That's been well documented. And he's had all of these close finishes here, and the excruciating ways that he has gone about losing some of these trophies this year, it has been some of the most painful watches to see the way that he has gone down in some of these. And it almost feels like it's all leading up for him to perform well at the British here. But he first tries to defend his title at the Scottish Open starting next week.
He certainly does. And he is going to be a huge fan favorite over there. And I think for Rory, as I sit back and think about what he's done since Pinehurst and kind of gone into seclusion and trying to regroup and get his mind right, as much as we didn't want to see him disappear and, you know, leave us like that before a signature event, I think it was the best thing for him. And I think the proof will be where he finishes, not only next week, but really at the British Open. And, you know, if he were to be able to come full circle and secure the British Open, it would really put a nice cherry on top what would otherwise be a wonderful season of major championships. Oh, yeah. for the game of golf. And this is all, again, while this whole thing with LIV is going on, and it makes you wonder just how great things could even be if we were to get these guys back together on a more regular basis and just not having them for the four majors.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, when we come back, let's get into the British Open a little bit more, including Rory McIlroy. And does he need this British Open to kind of redeem himself for what the last, what, 2-3 years have been? He's played fantastic golf in majors, but it just has not been championship worthy. So we will discuss Rory McIlroy, the rest of the British Open when we come back here, as we are less than 2 weeks out to Royal Troon. All that coming up next. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.